We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Welcome into the Thursday RotoWire NFL podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie, joined as always by Mario Puig. It is October 1st. I can't believe we are already into October. We're into week four of the NFL season. Things are going so fast already. We've already had some craziness around the league, of course, with all the injuries, and then, of course, with the Pittsburgh Titans game getting postponed for this week. But Mario, Before we're going to dive into the entire slate here, but man, can you think of a better Thursday night matchup that we're getting treated to than Broncos Jets as currently constructed?
Yeah, man, we needed this.
Yeah, brother.
Like, it's been a pretty rough year, and even this season, like with the Titans news recently, it's like, you know, we're making it, but then we're still taking shots like that, and it's like you just need something to give you some hope to get back up after you take a hit like that. And luckily this game is happening, and you know, we will be better tomorrow, I'm pretty sure.
What I will say though, and I tweeted this out on Sunday when I guess the Sunday Night Football crew announced what the next game was going to be, and it was Eagles 49ers, and I feel like in a way a Broncos Jets Thursday night game is more palatable than a like a disappointment fest that San Francisco versus the Eagles is going to look like. Like, this is a Thursday. Yeah. This is a Thursday game. I have lower expectations as it stands already. And then there's just goofiness. There's the Jets. There's you know, the dumpster fire element that they currently are and have been for years. The Broncos working with Brett Rippon as their quarterback. Like, there's some entertainment value here. Whereas, like, we'll get to the 49ers Eagles game a little bit later on, but that game, it's like two teams that theoretically should be good. I guess the Niners still have a chance at it, but the Eagles, like, I don't really want to watch them on my Sunday night game.
No, yeah, I mean, it's it's a better game, like we already said, a good game that we have with the Jets and Broncos, and I'm just happy to have that one.
We're going to have a lot of entertainment value. I think there's going to be a lot of pick
sixes. It might actually be like, you know, we know what happens when one of these teams, to be serious, when one of these teams plays a good team, it's like a bad football that happens. Like the Jets, the Broncos, especially the Jets, do poorly, but maybe when they're more around like their like kind, they become, you know, better. Maybe it'll be a good game because two bads make a good or something.
I think you're right, man. So I think that we might sneakily be in for a treat on this Thursday night game. So again, Jets 1-point favorites in this matchup going up against the Broncos. What is there to expect here? And is there really anything to draw from a fantasy angle here?
I guess so, maybe, just because, again, when we're talking about totally awful teams, that includes bad defenses in most cases and in some capacities. And these teams aren't really known for the bad defense. And it's just that they're both pretty beat up, especially the Denver defense is really beat up. It's like, yeah, if you have Von Miller and Jarrell Casey, Bradley Chubb, A.J. Bouye, Justin Simmons, that's a pretty good defense or so. It sounds pretty good, but not only is Von Miller out, but now Jeremiah Tauchu's out. He might have been a pretty decent replacement, mm-hmm. but he's out now. Jarrell Casey, best lineman, he's out now. So I'm not expecting Denver going on the road to put up one of their better defensive efforts of the year. Of course, maybe it won't matter if the Jets keep being as bad on offense as they've been, but I guess they get Jamison Crowder back in some capacity. I don't know if he's going to be able to play like a full workload or whatever. But, yeah, I mean, it's like maybe Crowder and maybe Braxton Berrios are good enough at receiver relative to the past weeks of what Sam Darnold's been working with. And maybe the Broncos are just so beat up that they just can't really get a tight defense ready for this one. I don't know. There's some leaks that could kind of spring, you know, when you're talking about teams this dysfunctional.
I think so too. And then, you know, I think that the Broncos defense could also be put in a tough spot. Not that Sam Darnold is innocent of not turning the ball over, but I think that the Broncos could be in trouble as far as their turnovers are concerned for Thursday night. I think Brett Rypien, as good of a college quarterback as he was at Boise State, I think there's a reason why, you know, he wasn't drafted high. I don't think he has the requisite arm strength to really move an NFL offense. I think that this could be a good spot. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but I, as someone that has the Titans defense, had to find a streaming defense on the waivers, and there's so many high implied totals around the league this week. I think reading Chris Liss's Beating the Book, 9 of the 16 games before the Steelers one was knocked off the board had over-unders north of 50. This one only 41. So I figured if you had to stream a defense, like avoiding those games, probably step one, and then, you know, you kind of hold your nose, but going with the Jets defense, going up against the Broncos offense that is led by Brett Rypien, that doesn't have likely Philip Lindsay, doesn't have, obviously, Cortland Sutton is just dinged up all across the board, doesn't have a good offensive line. I think that this could be just a cave-in scenario for the Broncos offense.
Yeah, it could be. And as much as I was saying, maybe there could be some, you know, defensive slip-ups, this is more likely to be a low scoring game than a high scoring one, like you said. So either defense is probably pretty good streaming wise if you got a tough spot with your first option. But you can imagine Rypien struggling quite a bit. But for what it's worth, he did run Ryan Finley out of Boise State. So technically, like if we're setting the mark at what the Bengals paid for Finley, then Rypien is like a mid fourth round pick or something. Neither of them should have gone anywhere near that high is the thing.
I like the way you frame that. That's an important detail there. Anything else? Bengals.
I'm not going to watch this.
Okay. Fair enough. I will, but,
I'll make a showdown lineup and not watch.
There you go. I think that's a smart way of going about it. Let's move on over to greener pastures. Let's get on to Sunday's slate, starting things out in Carolina with the Cardinals facing off against the Panthers. Cardinals 3.5-point road favorites. Kyler Murray obviously looking to bounce back after a rough outing this past week. The Panthers went out west and got what they needed, got the win against a Chargers team that will always find a way to lose when they shouldn't. So that was it's good to know that like that brand still holds even without Phillip Rivers. It's just it's a Chargers thing, not a Rivers thing. But how do the Cardinals bounce back here? I know they need to, and obviously DeAndre Hopkins I think has been a little bit limited this week with an injury.
Right. So the Cardinals are pretty beat up. I guess we can maybe see something turn for the better at receiver for them if Christian Kirk might be back. He's been limited in practice. Don't know what's going on with the Hopkins thing, but if he's there and if Kirk is there, that would be good because their defense might take a step back without Buda Baker, who I guess is going to be out for like a little while at least with a thumb injury. So that's a team where, you know, the up-tempo approach tends to invite the counting stats anyway. And if the defense takes a step back in a setting like that, it could bring out some of the higher range results for most of the Panthers' offense. And I guess, you know, based on the last 2 weeks, Mike Davis could be the first name worth mentioning because it's I don't understand why he's getting all these targets, but they're there and he's doing a good job.
Yeah, he's not bad.
Right. So it's like one of those things like the last year or like even the Bears, but he's doing a pretty good job so far. Like that wasn't an easy defense last week and he did a good job. So he should be pretty good set up here with up tempo game against the Cardinals. And DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel are just kind of, you know, they get a bit of a boost for the matchup too.
Yeah. I wanted to ask just like your general impressions on, you know, we're only a few weeks into the season, but how does this Panthers offense look to you? I know losing McCaffrey is a huge factor in this, but what does the passing game look like in a way that's different and meaningful for you with this Panthers team now that they have the new offense with Joe Brady?
Honestly, not really that much. I guess it's just kind of like, they took Curtis Samuel mostly away from the outside and like Robbie Anderson being in the mix. It's kind of curious that he's working so well right away with the Rule prior connection from Temple. It's like, if it seems like they might've almost accommodated or had like a specific role in mind that they knew Anderson would perfectly fit. But, I just want to see more, DJ Moore get more shots underneath because I feel like he, and this is the same thing that they were making a mistake with last year. It's not new with his coaching staff. But it's like that guy we know doesn't separate downfield as well as Samuel or Anderson. And it's not because he lacks the athleticism. Like, of course he's a speed threat and he can jump over guys, but he's just not as good of a route runner for whatever reason downfield. Like he's better just, you know, give him the ball as quick as you can, let him make yardage after the catch. And when you do throw it to him, it's like he can still be good, but it's like he has to do a jump ball sort of thing more often than probably Anderson and Samuel. So I feel like they're kind of missing an opportunity in that respect. But Robbie Anderson's obviously doing great. And so, like, I guess his results, you know, are a bit of a counter to my argument, I guess, but I think it's more specifically Samuel in the slot doesn't make any sense because he struggles to hold the ball over traffic.
Yeah.
He's better at getting open deep. And if they would change that, I think it would be noticeably better. But other than that, I guess it's just, you know, Robbie Anderson showed up and took some of Samuel's outside snaps. And now Samuel is just playing like the Jarius Wright snaps.
Yeah, I'm happy to take the L on Robbie Anderson. I'm a big Robbie Anderson fan. I just thought that him meshing with Teddy Bridgewater didn't really make a ton of sense to me, but it's working out so far. When it comes to DJ Moore, they are sending him really far down the field, and it's not really connecting, like you said. His A-dot
further than Anderson.
Yeah, his A-dot is almost 13 yards, and the catch rate down to 53.8. I think that bounces back soon enough, and maybe that comes along with the A-dot dropping down a little bit, but I don't see Moore struggling much longer than this. I mean, he had the great game in week two against the Buccaneers, of course. Tough matchup last week. According to our metrics, Arizona's been stingy against opposing receivers, but I don't know if that is really something to buy in or jump in with both feet on.
No.
So I think that there's room for DJ Moore to get things rolling again. I don't think that we're going to see him get four targets in a one-game sample again.
I think this is a totally good setup for him. It's like all three of those guys get a boost, but I think Moore is the one who wins over the longer term over Anderson. So, yeah, I think this is a good spot for him to kind of correct that trajectory then.
Okay. And then let's get on to the other side. Obviously, Kyler Murray threw the picks last week, but I think that he's not really that hasn't been like a huge part of his game. I think that he'll get past that. I don't think that he's due for another like three pick type of performance. But getting on to the run game, Kenyon Drake obviously hasn't returned the value that a lot of people were expecting, especially as investors in the late first, early second round. His high watermark thus far being week one with 14.5 points in PPR formats, hasn't rushed over 86 yards yet in any one game. That's still a strong mark to be clear, but a matchup against Carolina, it does feel like even for a guy like me that's a little bit skeptical of Drake as a season-long asset, I like him for DFS at least.
Yeah, I agree. That's one of those things where the mixing of kind of like season-long fantasy football with the DFS and 24/7 news cycle kind of brain goes wrong, because if you hold like reasonable long-term expectations for the guy and you know don't expect him to be Alvin Kamara, then what happened so far this year isn't a surprise at all, and it doesn't change your opinion of him. And if your prior opinion of him was high enough that you ranked him where you did, then a game like this should just kind of be like a green light for him. So I don't know what I'm going to do with my DFS lineups exactly, and I don't have any Drake season-long shares. But if I did, I'd be expecting this to be one of my better weeks, and DFS, I'm definitely going to take him more seriously this week than most others.
Yeah, I think so too. So this sets up extremely well for Drake, even as someone that's not overly high on him. Do you think Arizona covers this spread on the road, though?
I guess if only because I feel like if they don't cover it, then it's because they lost. Mm-hmm. I'll say yes.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that the Cardinals should be able to win by more than a field goal there. Would prefer it to be 2.5, but 3, I think that the Cardinals should manage. I think that they are more like they were the first 2 weeks of the season than that goofy game against the Lions a week ago, especially if they cut down on the turnovers. Let's get on over to the Colts versus the Bears. Indianapolis, 2.5-point road favorites in this one, going up against Chicago. The Nick Foles era in Chicago seems to be underway. Trubisky, think it's over. Think it's done. We all knew it was going to happen at some point. Didn't know it'd be week 3 of this year, but couldn't necessarily argue that it wouldn't either. So Foles,
man, that is so funny. That they deserve this. It's so great. Yeah, it's so such a good thing that they spent that fourth round pick on Foles so that they didn't make Mitch Trubisky lose a quarterback competition that he would lose in the season. There's a reason the Galaxy Brain meme came about, and it was because the English language didn't have words for the brain power that cases
Ryan,
like this.
Ryan Pace, yeah. So, that's kind of what we're dealing with in the Windy City.
It's good for the Bears' fantasy prospects, though, because mm-hmm. it's more rushing attempts for David Montgomery or whoever, and it's more pass attempts because they're going to get more first downs, and a few of those first downs, again, are going to be from Trubisky running or whatever with Foles. So it's really good for Allen, or like a stabilizing thing, I think, for Allen Robinson, and it, I think, creates room for one of Anthony Miller or Darnell Mooney to become consistently relevant. And with Tariq Cohen especially being out of the offense and some slot snaps opening up, I would guess it's Miller.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure what to make of the Cohen fallout from that. But like you said, with the slot snaps being opened up, maybe Miller gets a little bit more going that way. But Darnell Mooney, over 60% or more of the snaps in each of the last couple of weeks, playing more than Anthony Miller has actually in both of those games. Yeah. So, I mean, it's looking
like he's outside. So it's like Miller up to this point had only been getting in when there's a slot snap, and Cohen was taking a bunch of those already. So, it's stupid that Nagy didn't get Miller on the field anyway. You have to find a way to get your best players on the field, and he's pretty clearly their second best receiver. But Mooney's pretty good too, and he's got like the speed to kind of make the safeties, keep track of him.
Right, yeah, Mooney does have that blistering speed, 4.38 in the 40, and then also had the really good jumps as well. Not a particularly big imposing figure, but again, that speed and explosiveness is definitely a difference making factor for him. So I like him a fair bit. What do you make of Jimmy Graham? I think that might be like the biggest fluke of the fantasy season last week, but I can't be certain of it because there was the quarterback change involved as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Graham has been really difficult to figure out. Like, it seems like he's been more or less busted for 3 years, and yet there were certain, you know, anecdotal excuses and injury things that he was playing through that might explain his struggles here or there or whatever. But, I did not see 3 touchdowns in his first 3 weeks, and I can't tell if that's because I was wrong about him or if it's just because this is a fluke, like you said, and that it's going to pass. I think that's what I'm going with. It's just that it might be one of those things, too, where if the Bears get in the red zone, maybe it's pretty much either him and, to a lesser extent, Allen Robinson who get the targets. Like, I don't know if it's going to turn into a dependency thing in that part of the field, and maybe they it being just so bad for Miller and Mooney or whoever because of Foles being unable to throw the ball effectively in a tight space. Like, maybe it's just that means Foles does a bunch of, like, ill-advised jump balls at Graham, and maybe it's inefficient, but maybe it's one of those things. Like, if anyone scores, it's him. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it's been so far, but I don't know. I just think he's got to be busted, and I guess I don't really – like, I'm definitely not picking him up anywhere. It's just one of those things, like, if I'm wrong, I guess I'm going to keep paying for it.
Yep, I think that's a great way of putting it, because I'm not buying in either, even in the face of him having two very start-worthy games in hindsight through the first 3 weeks of the season, both against Detroit and against Atlanta. According to our metrics, that Indianapolis has been the toughest defense against opposing tight ends. Again, I don't know if that's more just a function of who they've played the first 3 weeks or what have you, but at the very least, it does look like it'll be a tougher matchup for Graham than certainly getting those 10 targets against Atlanta was.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting to me is basically if there's a route for a Bears tight end to run, Graham has run all of them. The other guys are running some, to be serious, but it's like Cole Kmet is blocking more than a third of the time. And so that's to say he's basically not running many routes. Right. If he starts running over 75, something like that, then I think that pretty much negates whatever slim margin Graham is kind of like succeeding with in the meantime.
Okay, so if Kmet starts to develop and start to get more deployed in the passing game, then that's a bad sign for Graham. But, I mean, they just might need Kmet to be that blocking tight end because that Graham has just never been, you know, good at that.
That's true. It's just what Graham needs to worry about is Kmet being as good as a receiver as him, too. And mm-hmm. I think the only reason it hasn't really shown up is because they're not giving Kmet the chance. But if Kmet plays more snaps this week, it might be because Graham had 3 targets or something.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Let's move on over to the Indianapolis side of this. Their defense absolutely crushed it last week, of course, and the Jets were a huge reason why. But what do we make of the fantasy options for this Colts core going into Chicago?
Well, maybe I shouldn't. Like, maybe there's something wrong with the Bears' defense, but I kind of respect them, and it's not easy for me to just look at an offense going against that defense in Chicago, more specifically, and then think, oh, this is going to be a walk in the park. Like, it's just kind of like an ugly place to play, and I feel like I just have bad memories about that stadium and that team and my players playing against them there. So I don't have a rational basis behind that, but that's just how I feel. And so on the other hand, you pull up the, you know, points versus position, defensive points allowed to fantasy positions. At running back, the Bears have been one of the more friendly defenses, and they're allowing 4.9 yards per carry to running back so far. So I noticed not much going in the pass catching game, though, like basically nothing. So do I think Jonathan Taylor can run on these guys? Yes. I also don't think Jonathan Taylor is quite on rhythm yet the way that he's going to be. And it could just happen this week. It might not, though. Maybe it needs to happen at home against an easier defense. I don't really know. But I don't think Taylor's on quite the same rhythm that he was at Wisconsin. And it's a different, you know, scheme. And I think he's kind of like a delicately tuned running back in the sense that, like, when he's on at Wisconsin, the way that he was on at Wisconsin, it was just such a, you know, no doubt, you know, Jedi, like he's got you know,
you knew from the blind, first snap he's eating today,
but he's still swinging the sword around and stuff like that. And with the Colts, it's like he's having to learn how to do all that stuff again and like learn how to read blocks on different bases than they did at Wisconsin. And so it's kind of like, you know, how Daryl Henderson just didn't really get going last year, and then this year for some reason all of a sudden it just goes on. Like, I think it's going to be kind of like that. And Henderson was picking up a different kind of zone blocking scheme that the Rams ran that Memphis didn't really, so we'll see. I think the final version of Taylor would run over this defense, I think, but I think it's going to have to have more to do with like volume than explosiveness if he has a good game here.
I think the volume should tick back up, though. I don't expect him to get the 26 carries like he did against the Vikings, but 13 carries last week said more about just the game script and them not wanting to.
He had a lot of early carries. Mm-hmm. I feel like he got to like 9 carries almost like right after the first quarter and or something like that.
He's had 5 or more red zone carries in each of the last 2 weeks. Like that, yeah, everything is setting up really well for him.
He's thinking really, he's instead of just running instinctively like he did at Wisconsin, it's like he's thinking about making the right reads in the Colts system. And he's like, don't get me wrong, I don't know how this goes away anytime soon, but he's probably thinking about the ball security. So it's like, whereas at Wisconsin, he's using, you know, his reactive bandwidth to just kind of like sense cutback lanes and, you know where to run and how fast and stuff like that. He's instead thinking about like, which way am I facing right now? Do I have the ball? Yes. Okay. What now? And, mm-hmm. you know, it's like already in that amount of time, you're already too slow relative to like what you were doing at Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's true. So once the, like the thinking process becomes a little bit more reflexive, then, you know, we'll start to see the full form of Taylor.
Maybe going back to the region, maybe going into the cold Midwest is what brings him alive.
But
that's a narrative that no one's going to think of.
He had some bad games against Illinois, though, didn't he? Maybe.
Maybe.
I think Northwestern,
I would guess more likely. But
That's a good point. Yeah,
but he's going back to the climate, and it's going to, you know.
Getting out of the dome. Yeah, yeah, that's
same
important.
Same smells are going to take you back to the place where you ran for 2,000 yards 3 years in a row.
There we go. I like where your head's at on this very much. As far as this Indianapolis passing game is concerned, we haven't seen Hilton really turn it on. Michael Pittman and Paris Campbell both being sidelined really, really stings. I liked the receiving core that they had coming into the season, and losing two out of those three really, really stings because it was such a problem behind T.Y. Hilton the last couple of years. I mean, Zach Pascal, like, I respect like where he's come from and being like an Old Dominion guy that's made it in the NFL, like that's great and everything, but I don't think that's a starting receiver on a winning team necessarily. So
right. It's gotta be like Mo.
Yeah. Okay. I was hoping that you would say that. I was kind of angling towards it because I've picked up Mo Alie-Cox in a bunch of spots.
Yeah, I mean, to be serious, I feel like Rivers should be able to get some kind of like high-low sort of game going with Hilton on the sidelines, like where he gets the corner, the boundary corner, either Fuller or Jalen Johnson, to kind of turn their hips, and then it's like you turn it back into a hook or an out route or something like that, and maybe get a little bit of a outside game going that way. And if they bite hard enough and Hilton gets open enough on a double move or something, then that's how they can maybe make something go over the top. But they have to like get those corners off their tracks because they set them in these like cover three tracks, and they're really good when they're playing within that format. But Mo, even if Hilton's getting shut down and even if Pascal's not able to get anything going, Mo's just one of those guys where it's like, he's so big and we know he can jump pretty high, and he's, you know, got the basketball background. That's in addition to all those other things, it becomes interesting. It's like, if he was just a basketball player, you get Rico Gathers or whatever it is. But if you got actual talent to work with, that's also incidentally got a basketball skill set, that's pretty interesting because it means he doesn't necessarily really need to get open to present a viable target. But we also have reason to believe he can get open, and we also have reason to believe that he can do a lot after the catch. So that just sounds like a lot of reasons that would make it easy for you to have a reason to give him the ball.
You know who else played basketball? Antonio Gates.
Antonio freaking Gates.
That's right, brother. And you know who else also played basketball? Jimmy Graham.
Oh, is this, I was going to say Randy.
This is, but, the, is this the Jimmy RotoWire Graham basketball podcast?
Julius Peppers.
Yeah. George Fant. many other people.
And he's awesome.
Yeah. Right. Okay, that's the signal that we've exhausted this Colts Bears game. Let's get on to Jags Bengals. Bengals 3-point favorites in this one. They're at home. Jaguars coming off that kind of surprising, but sometimes your number gets called and Fitzpatrick has his game against you. So that's kind of what happened to the Jaguars last week, and they didn't play very well to be clear. But going up against the Bengals, who are coming off one of the more epic ties I can remember in recent memory, just a game that reeked of tie from the start, and it just,
the peak of humanity was that last punt. It's just like, guys, it was worth it.
It was.
It all was worth it. Yeah, but I don't know why, I don't know whether I agree with it, but it looks like the more money is coming on the. Sorry, I'm reading this wrong. The over-under is up 4.5 points, which seems like a lot to me, and I don't know what changed to make it that much. And the spread did not change during that. So if that money is right, then I guess we should have a shootout here. And if the Bengals are the favorite, that would make sense because their inclination is to be pretty up-tempo. And if they get a lead, you're just kind of carried into going up-tempo with them. I don't think Jay Gruden is normally a tempo guy. I think he's normally more like his brother, actually. But as long as Cincinnati is kind of dictating the pace, then Jacksonville kind of has to go with it. And then if they do, it's like we know they got a bunch of receivers and James Robinson who are pretty interesting. So you could imagine a lot of guys getting involved in this one. And I guess, you know, Chark being out last week might have had a significant amount to do with the struggles of Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, Chark, replacing him with Chris Conley is terrible.
Yeah, Chark is their best player. And it's like when you go from your best player to one who's maybe suited to be like a situational backup, it's like, yeah, the offense is going to suffer. So I think getting Chark back, if he's, you know, knock on wood, if that's all going fine, if he's back, then it's just a totally different game. Everything about where you line up the defensive backs for the Bengals changes in light of that. So I think that Minshew should be fine, especially for fantasy, if only because of there just might be a decent number of plays logged in this game. He should be fine. But also, I think he's more likely to play kind of in the realm of the first 2 weeks than last week, at least in a game like this.
Yeah, this sets up really, really, really well for Minshew. I think that he'll bounce back nicely. I really like James Robinson for this week, though. It's going to be hard to stay away from him. I mean, the Bengals' run defense, I think, is pretty toothless. I think that James Robinson is, you know, a fringe top five type of running back this week.
Yeah, I was trying to pull up the Bengals' injury report. Is Geno still out?
I think he's still on the injury report. I'm not sure if he's going to be back or not this week, but he's questionable with the shoulder.
He's a limited practice participant on Wednesday, so that would be kind of interesting. Like, Geno will make them a fundamentally different defense if he's out there and if he's himself. But in either case, James Robinson looks great just because of same reason as Minshew. Basically, it's like they're gonna have to run a lot of plays, and he's so far looking pretty good, and he qualifies for usage on a high percentage of those plays.
Yes, he does. And again, what is there to look out for if Chark is either limited or out this week as far as that passing game goes?
Well, last week, I guess the answer was just they chuck it at Chris Conley and he kind of blows it.
Yep.
But maybe, I mean, I thought all along what they were going to do was not put Conley out there. I thought they were going to put Chark mostly outside, but sometimes in the slot. Chenault mostly in the slot, but sometimes outside. And then Dede Westbrook outside. I thought Keelan Cole would be the fourth receiver. And I like Cole. I think the way they're using him is smart.
He's played well.
Last week, if Chark is out, it's a no-brainer to me that you give Dede Westbrook those snaps instead of Conley. And I don't even think Westbrook's that good. I just think he was miscast as a slot receiver underneath player, and he's at his best outside running downfield like he did at Oklahoma, which is specifically what they needed someone to do last week, and they had Conley do it instead, and I don't understand.
Because Conley looks more aesthetically pleasing when he does it.
They're paying him more, I guess. But it's like, man, if you had Westbrook out there, he might just kind of get so open on one of those plays that it's just kind of like an easy throw or something like that. And he's definitely more of a threat underneath than Conley. So I think they could really make things easier on themselves by just benching Conley for Westbrook. But I don't have I have no like evidence that they're going to do that.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong. Like Westbrook, I know that he's not the pro. He doesn't have the build and, you know, athletic measurables that Conley does. But I think he's a better football player.
Oh, absolutely.
Bar none.
He was super productive at Oklahoma.
Ridiculous.
And then the Jaguars changed his position, and he was bad at it.
Yeah. So moving back outside, if Chark is out, and then step three, profit. On the Bengals side of this, make sense of the receiving core for me. A lot of people are ready to be completely done with AJ Green. I can't completely disagree with them at this point. And part of that is because it looks like T. Higgins is happening.
Well, T. Higgins is happening, but also T. Higgins gets played differently than A.J. Green does, and A.J. Green's still getting the targets. I know it's largely juiced by the first 2 weeks. Last week, he only had 6 targets on obviously quite a bit less air yardage per target because he only had 36 yards on 5 catches. So he caught most of his targets. There's no yardage going on there. So that could be because he wasn't able to get open against Slay, or it could be that the pass blocking was so bad that Burrow just couldn't really wait for Green's downfield targets to materialize. So T. Higgins wasn't running against Slay. He was running against, I assume, Avante Maddox initially, and then he got hurt. And so it must have been like Cravon LeBlanc or Trevor Williams that he was running against. And those guys, especially Maddox, but even the other two, it's like they're just kind of like munchkins compared to T. Higgins. And T. Higgins was super productive at Clemson at really young age. So that's just a kind of thing that indicates usually that he's got skill set to work with. And he's got a huge build mismatch and then a skill advantage too. So particularly if there was a little bit of a funnel going away from Green, that could explain why Higgins did well. But even if that's the explanation, you could imagine the Jaguars mostly putting CJ Henderson on AJ Green and presenting a similar dynamic. Excuse me, just because Trey Henderson's going to be the easier target, just like last week, Cravon LeBlanc and Avante Maddox were the easier target. So it could be another good setup for T. Higgins, but I'm not really inclined to say that I'm optimistic about Higgins because I'm pessimistic about Green. Mm-hmm. I'm more inclined to say like they both should be looking pretty good here.
Okay, and for the record, it looks like we have all three, Boyd, Green, and Higgins, ranked inside our top 40 at receivers.
Boyd too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, gotta love Boyd. I mean, Boyd ranked at number 11 for us, AJ Green a fringe wide receiver 2 at 24, and then Higgins more of a wide receiver 3 or a flex play depending on your league, checking in at wide receiver 39 for this week. So definitely playable for this week. So a lot to like about this Bengals offense potentially in a game that, like you astutely noted, the total keeps going up for. So I think there's going to be plenty of points in that matchup. Let's get on over to another game that's going to be minimal on the defense and heavy on the offense. We got the Browns going down to Big D to face off against the Cowboys. Cowboys 4.5-point favorites in this one. Cowboys cannot play defense to save their lives. Their offense is great, especially the passing game. But I guess what it comes down to for me that I'm trying to figure out is the Browns' run game is so good, but is that going to be enough to carry them to a win necessarily? I don't think if they get into a shootout type of situation that Baker is really cut out for it.
Right, he is not. They've basically folded up the whole passing game already, and they're saying like we're not even going to try with this one. So that's pretty discouraging, really. I don't think it reflects very well on Kevin Stefanski that this is the case. I think he looks pretty bad, actually. But it's hard to screw up this running game that they have, so they'll have that to whatever extent they can afford to divert usage toward it. And against Dallas, that's obviously the limitation, the real problem, because, well, I guess Dallas's run defense has been pretty good so far, to be fair, so we'll see. It might not be actually like an easy matchup for Chubb or Hunt, but I feel like they should be fine. I feel like Chubb and Hunt, the quality of runners that they are, kind of still overrules the Cowboys one. It's like maybe Dallas is good. It's just not good enough against runners like these, probably. But the other side is, it's like I'm a little worried about, I'm a lot worried about that stupid Dallas offensive line, which it's like if Tyron Smith can't play and Myles Garrett on one side, sorry, I can't remember, I guess it's Claiborne on the other side. And then they got Sheldon Richardson and Ogunjobi here. So that pass rush could be a problem for Dak, and if Dak can't throw the ball, then that could take Dallas out of like the shootout scenario. And I don't know if the Browns, especially being underdogs like this, they might kind of try to sit on the ball and go low tempo, chop away some of the play count in this game. So I'm a little anxious about it. Like, I'm definitely going to target it, and I'm like invested in it no matter what I think, just because I got so many Chubb shares. But I think you know, Chubb and Hunt should be fine. It's just the question is, in the Browns case, it's like, will they have the reason to go at Beckham, Landry, Hooper, and will they do it successfully if they do have the reason? And I'm kind of iffy on both of those.
Okay, that definitely makes sense. And then when it comes to Kareem Hunt, he's not practicing Thursday with a groin, so that's going to be something to monitor.
Okay, yeah, if he's out, then Chubb, RB1, whatever, I don't care.
Let's go. Let's get on to the Cowboys side a little bit more, like specifically in terms of trying to measure out the pecking order of those pass catchers, because I mean, it was already really deep and hard to figure out between Lamb, Amari Cooper, and Michael Gallup. And then you see, you know, Cedric Wilson come off the bench and dominate last week. And it's like, how do you make sense of all of this? And what do you do about it? Like for DFS purposes?
I think that was just because Dallas was playing a lot of four wide receiver, and Cedric Wilson might be pretty good, but I still think he's clearly their wide receiver four and won't play basically most weeks. Because you look at the snap count from last week, it's 70 for Gallup, 65 for Cooper, 49 for Lamb, which is a little bit of a decrease than the prior weeks. But then you got Noah Brown and Cedric Wilson combining for 53, whereas the prior 2 weeks, respectively, Brown and Wilson combined for 12 and 6 snaps. So that's what changed. And I, especially if Dalton Schultz is playing, they can't run that many 4 wide snaps. So I would guess that we see Wilson fade out of the picture. And it's pretty simply, if one of Gallup or Cooper or Lamb misses a game, then Wilson is totally back into the, you know, mainstream consideration. But I don't think there's anything to chase there. And okay. He's good or whatever, but it was just kind of fluky, the game that he had, I think.
Yeah, that game was just wild in every way last Sunday. What a fun game that lived up to the hype of that, you know, like premier afternoon matchup out there in Seattle. Anything else to add on this game before we move on?
No, the Dallas receivers all look pretty good, but I can't really get a beat for what exactly they're trying to do in that offense. I don't know what kind of identity it really has yet. And I don't know. I guess I kind of just defer to Cooper in DFS for now, just because he seems like the best one.
And yeah, and carries a bit of a bargain too, I would imagine, because just how many other receivers are involved in that Cowboys offense. Let's move on over to the Saints going up to Detroit to face off against the Lions. Saints played that fun Sunday night game. go on.
Oh, I just hate it. It's kind of funny what Matt Patricia, what he's doing with those running backs, you know, DeAndre Swift, Kerryon Johnson, and Adrian Peterson. He's very specifically like answering the question of what would have happened if in Alvin Kamara's rookie year, Matt Patricia was the coach of the New Orleans Saints. And the answer to the question is Alvin Kamara never plays. Adrian Peterson leads the team in carries, and Mark Ingram is like a healthy scratch or something. Like that's
They all three were on the team, right?
Yeah, they had Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara, and Adrian Peterson on the team, and Sean Payton got to the games, and he was like, "Huh, Alvin Kamara is better than Adrian Peterson. I guess I'll just play Alvin Kamara then." And Matt Patricia was like, shakes his head in the background, is like, "No. You don't do that. You got to respect the veteran. That guy didn't earn it, okay? The veteran did. He proved it on the field. And so we will be making Alvin Kamara a healthy scratch. Thank you." So that's – yeah, anyway, that's just like such a useful like case study collision here that helps really clarify the perspective of these people. It's like Matt Patricia has no clue. Sean Payton is the, you know, good parallel universe version of Matt Patricia, because he cut Adrian Peterson and let Alvin Kamara turn into a star immediately.
I like this.
Yeah, so DeAndre Swift will be good whenever he has a coach that isn't actively trying to sabotage him. But in the meantime, they're going to have to lose some more games.
Yeah. lunch is canceled due to lack of hustle. So when it comes to this Lions offense, then goofy run game notwithstanding, how do they stack up in the passing game now that Kenny Golladay is back going up against the Saints?
Well, Lattimore has been struggling a little bit, but I guess part of his issue, too, is he only tries if he's going against Mike Evans and Julio Jones. And then he's like, I'm done. I'm not working anymore. Yeah, so maybe Kenny Golladay is good enough to get his attention and make him what he can be, which is, you know, a really good corner. Who's to say? I don't really know. Marvin Jones just doesn't really seem to have it going yet. I don't know if that's going to change. I don't know if he's maybe losing something now that he's over 30 years old. I guess it's possible. I'd like to see the Lions. Don't get me wrong. I have no hope about Swift. I hope that they use him more, but I don't actually have any hope. Whereas with Hockenson, I'm like, what are you idiots doing with Jesse James and these other tight ends? It's like Patricia has this just goofy idea that it's a simple man's sort of assumption that you should just play your best players. No, I'm a smarter football coach. I know it's not that simple. You got to put your best players in the background sometimes. I don't know what he thinks. You got to do something stupid because the defense wouldn't expect you to do something stupid. And now you've tricked them. And now your bad player is running free for a pass that he'll drop. I don't know what the theory is, but Hockenson, they need to have a big game here to win, I think. And I don't know. I think the Saints are going to be, through Kamara mostly, but I feel like Latavius Murray should be able to get going in this one too. And Traquan and Sanders should be enough, I think, for the Saints. I don't really think anybody, but I'm not going to play Peterson either. I think he's been bad. I know he's had good numbers, but you saw that play, that 25-yard run that he had 2 weeks ago, where it took him 10 seconds to do it. It was unreal. Clearly it would have been a touchdown if it was Kerryon Johnson or DeAndre Swift, but he gets that 25-yard run because the Packers fell asleep. And Matt Patricia is using it as further evidence to keep his better players on the bench. So I don't know how you win when you're doing things like that to your team.
Nope, definitely not a great setup. And what Patricia is doing thus far, and we're in year three there in Detroit. When it comes to the Saints, again, one guy we need to mention here is Michael Thomas, still working his way back from the high ankle, but he did turn in a limited practice on Wednesday. I don't know. It depends on what my other options are. But if I have Thomas and he's active, it's going to be hard to leave him on the bench. But if I have good enough options the rest of the way, I might do a wait and see approach and bench him this week. I don't know. What do you think?
That would be fair. But I guess if he's actually doing things in practice, I can imagine them just taping up that ankle a lot and him going out there and I don't know how good he would be, but I think he could get those really short catches still. He probably just wouldn't be able to do the double, triple move type routes.
I'm looking at their team trends page right now. Alvin Kamara has a 30% target share.
Yeah, last week was so stupid. That was insane.
Yes, that was such a fun game. But it was ridiculous.
On that long touchdown catch, it was he was looking around did someone blow a whistle? I don't understand. These guys keep fake tackling me. It's he looked around thinking the play must have stopped because the defense was just so cartoonishly missing him.
Yeah, I think I messaged it to you during that game. It was a transition between levels in a video game where he defeated the first wave of enemies and then was running free. And then the next wave came on 30 yards down the field. There was just nothing around him for such a huge chunk of the field.
Where are they respawning? And they weren't. The defense was just that bad. They're still laying on the ground, rolling around like babies.
So that was nice and goofy. This game should be nice and goofy, but I do expect that the Saints to take care of business.
I don't often feel this way, but I hope the Lions lose every single game the rest of the way.
It's what they deserve.
They fire Patricia.
There we go. And his silly pencil. Let's get on over to the Texans going up against the Vikings. Texans, obviously, we've talked about, the schedule gods did them no favors, and they responded in kind with an 0-3 start, of course. They have a really good chance here, I think, to get off the schneid, and I think they will. And then on the other side, I think Justin Jefferson is happening as well, and it excites me greatly.
Yeah, what the hell was that, too? That's Kubiak did the halfway version with Justin Jefferson, what Patricia is doing with DeAndre Swift, where he's like, yeah, the rookie hasn't proven it yet.
Olabisi Johnson.
What if you give him, say, 7 targets in a game? Maybe. What do you think would happen? I don't know. He hasn't proven it in practice. It's like, okay, well, if he goes for 170 yards, how about you just admit you were wrong and we're probably being stupid one way or another and probably should have just had him on the field the whole time to begin with. It's like, do you really think he went from bad to as good as he was last week in a span of 4 days?
Right, exactly.
Shut up.
Yeah.
So Justin Jefferson is really good and they should have been throwing the ball the whole time. I think a game like last week compels even the dumbest of coaches to just go along with it at that point. I think even Patricia would probably go along with it at that point. So I think Jefferson will keep being good. It's just one of those things, like, we have to keep in mind how insanely explosive his numbers were last week. And as much as we can expect him to be some sort of good or very good, it's also impossible to keep up numbers like he had last week. It's really annoying when he's on your bench and he does something like that, but that might have been, like, you know, his best game of the year.
Right. It probably was. I mean, it's really, really tough to top 175 and a touchdown. And
yeah,
I loved the prance into the end zone and the celebration. That was awesome. They've been playing him looking at, like, his alignment charts. They've played him 40 snaps outside, 76 in the slot.
That means he played a lot more outside than he did last week than he did in the first two, because going into that game, he was pretty much just in the slot.
Okay. All right. So it looks like maybe he becomes that primary outside receiver.
Not only that, but in this game, Bradley Roby, if he's going to shadow someone, it would probably be Thielen.
Right.
So if Roby is always off of Jefferson, then that means he's always on some corner who's not particularly good.
So, like, a Vernon Hargreaves or something?
Hargreaves, I don't know if Conley's back yet, but it's like Lonnie Johnson from Kentucky. He's way too, like, tall and, you know, lanky to cut with a, you know, slot receiver, quick type like Justin Jefferson is. So I think he can beat, pretty much all those guys. They have that Penn State corner who's a rookie that isn't very good. Those guys are all major underdogs to Jefferson, in my opinion.
Okay, nice. All right, so Jefferson, arrow trending up. On the Texans side of things, the offense, you know, but it did okay relative to the matchup being on the road against Pittsburgh. Yeah. And everything like that. I think this sets up for the Texans offense to finally look like the Texans offense, I think, this week. What do you think?
Yeah, I still don't know what to expect of David Johnson. It's like, I can imagine certain settings where he is running effectively, where it kind of looks more like week one. He has some space to work with, but I don't know if it's against the Vikings where that happens. I feel like you kind of need to break a tackle and turn a corner, and like, maybe the Vikings leave that out there. Like, maybe they give you the chance to do it, but they still make you beat somebody to get there. And I don't know if David Johnson can beat anybody right now. I think it's like, he needs room and he can play well if he has it, but otherwise he kind of just collapses into contact, you know? So I don't really have my hopes high for him. And then it's, even when he's not running the ball, even when he's in coverage, if Kendricks is following, that's usually a no-go. So I'm not really optimistic for David Johnson. I feel like it's one of those settings, if he has a good game, it's because he kind of had some short yardage touchdowns or something like that. Some kind of goofy anecdote explaining it. But the receivers, I mean, I have nightmares still about that Panthers game last year with the Texans when their second corner was Ross Cockrell, and I don't even remember who the third corner was, but it was like, the Texans should torch these guys. And instead, Deshaun Watson had one of his very worst games of the year, probably one of the worst games of his career. And he was saying after the game, it was like, yeah, they just kept running cover four and all of our routes were covered by it. And Mike Zimmer is not, in my opinion, a great defensive coach, but he's definitely a smart enough one to figure out, like, oh yeah, cover four will take care of these. And if Bill O'Brien is that predictable in this game, I think Zimmer will have the routes pretty well decoded. But if those corners have to actually cover those receivers, and if Bill O'Brien's routes don't just play right into the zone coverages, then those corners can't cover those receivers at all.
Okay. All right. So a bit of scheme versus personnel here. We'll see what wins out. Still like Fuller for this week, but guys like Cooks and Cobb, I even with the Vikings defense not being what it was, I still feel
isn't Cobb doing pretty good?
I think so.
But Cooks is goofy, obviously, but I don't know. I feel like this. Actually, is Danielle Hunter back? He was on the 3-game IR. I don't know if Danielle Hunter's back. It doesn't change anything. I still like Deshaun Watson. I still like the Houston receivers. It's just that if Danielle Hunter were out, it would be like total green light. And I'm sorry, I'm pulling up his page right now. Yeah, he's out still. So if Bill O'Brien screws this up for the Houston passing game, then just got to chase him with pitchforks.
Yeah, that bodes extremely poor for the rest of the season when it comes to Texans. So definite get right spot at home for them. Hopefully they're able to answer the bell. Before we get on to our next game, we've got a message from our friends over at Prediction Strike. Prediction Strike is a fantasy sports stock market on which you can buy and sell shares of professional athletes as if they were stocks. Ever heard someone say, "I've had stock in this player since day one"? Well, now Prediction Strike makes that a real possibility. You had a stock in Patrick Mahomes his rookie year. You knew this would happen. Now it's a reality. Create a portfolio of all your favorite athletes and get closer to the game than ever before. To get started, simply visit PredictionStrike.com to create an account. Then deposit funds to buy, sell, and hold shares of your favorite players just like you would real stocks. Each game is like an earnings report. If the player beats his projections, his stock moves up. It's that easy. You can trade your shares of players anytime as long as the player isn't currently in a game. Get started today by visiting PredictionStrike.com and sign up with code ROTOWIRE to get an additional $10 off with your first deposit of $20 or more. Again, that's promo code ROTOWIRE on that one. All right, let's keep things rolling here. We got the Seahawks. Their offense, unbelievable, going down to Miami. Long flight for them to face off against the Dolphins. I like this spot for the Seahawks, but is this a potential trap game, a little bit of a letdown? They're almost touchdown favorites on the road. They're coming off the huge wins in each of the last 2 weeks, really, beating the Patriots and then beating the Cowboys. Going down to Miami to face the Dolphins. Any concern here?
Not really. Okay. I can't really think of anything. I mean,
I did my best to try to say that this was going to be anything other than
Seahawks. One of those things you can maybe imagine the defense giving up a little bit, or maybe they have a few three and outs or something. But eventually, even in those cases, they just turn to Russell Wilson and the receivers, and then it's just over again.
Yep. I mean, the way that Russell Wilson is playing right now is unbelievable. I think that he's the early season MVP thus far. I don't think that's slowing down. Tyler Lockett has been incredible. He kind of ended up being that value guy behind DK Metcalf in drafts. I understand the upside, and I still believe the upside when it comes to Metcalf overall, but Lockett seems to be the one right now that has a slight edge, but both of them are obviously great for your fantasy teams. Metcalf with a 22.4% target share thus far, Tyler Lockett checking in at almost 30%. So it's funny how 30% of your targets going to a receiver like Tyler Lockett and how that looks on paper versus 30% of your throws going to a running back like Alvin Kamara. So things are going very, very differently in those passing games between Seattle and New Orleans. But again, going down to Miami, what else do we need to say?
I'm trying to figure out is like what I think of the Seahawks defense, because I know people are saying like, oh, it's just trash, they suck. I think they're bad at a couple spots, but I don't think they're actually bad. I think they just played the Falcons and then the Cowboys, and I don't remember the other one. But if Dunbar's out, though, then they do have a problem at corner because Trey Flowers isn't very good. But if Quentin Dunbar is back, I don't trust Fitzpatrick to throw the ball very well. They would have to get it done to Gesicki. Gesicki has a good matchup either way, I should say. And I think that's the case even if Jamal Adams plays, which he might not. So Gesicki, I think it will be good. But as far as like the big Ryan Fitzpatrick game, you generally need Parker and Preston Williams to get going a little bit. And those two going against Griffin and Dunbar, is those are like the worst matchups for those types of receivers. Those corners are built for the receivers like those.
Oh, okay. All right. So that could be a problem. And then, if Fitzpatrick is not playing well and not having his Fitzpatrick game, We know the meltdown situation can come with him. So maybe like Seahawks become like a contrarian like streaming defense for this week, even though it's all the way cross country.
Yeah, I mean even when Fitzpatrick has his good games, he tends to turn the ball over. So I won't say it's definitely risky, but in a contrarian pursuit, it's kind of hard to argue against, I would say.
Okay, and then last thing to mention on the I guess you did mention were you saying Travis Homer homecoming?
Yeah, and DJ Dallas. I guess I should be fair. They're both doing homecoming thing,
which is pretty cool. And then Myles Gaskin on the other side playing against the team where he played college very close to?
Yes. See, that one too.
We're drawing it up.
I don't know what's going on there, but like last week I was saying I wouldn't really chase him. And that more so was applying to like the showdown thing. But at this point, after that game, it's like, well, yeah, I guess he's clearly their lead running back. Don't know what that's worth. I still don't think it makes that much sense. I think Breida is still clearly better and probably Howard too. But if Flores is giving him 20 carries, I guess that just kind of settles it.
Exactly. And he's getting the targets too. So it seems like Jordan Howard has fallen way behind.
Oh yeah, drop him, don't play him. And Breida, I have no hope either. But it's like, this is totally to me similar to playing Kalen Ballage over Kenyon Drake. It's just that this time the Kalen Ballage, the person playing the part of Kalen Ballage is not terrible.
Yeah, he actually has a pulse in Miles Gaskin.
And Howard and Breida are not Drake.
Right, exactly. So that this should continue on. If you grabbed Gaskin off the waiver wire, that should continue to be good. I like the usage for him at the very least, even if the efficiency isn't all that great. Let's stay in the state of Florida. We got the Buccaneers playing host to the Chargers. Bucks, 7-point favorites in this one. One of the more lower scoring games on the slate here, checking in at just 43 on the over under. No Chris Godwin. I know that the other kind of secondary receivers for the Bucks are dinged up. So does this create like the Mike Evans monster game, or does this end up being something where the run game gets rolling or the tight ends get rolling, like we saw Gronkowski last week?
I think it sets up really well for Mike Evans. I don't know how well it sets up for Brady. Like I could imagine Evans having like 120 yards and a touchdown or two, and Brady having 220 yards mm-hmm. and a touchdown or two and an interception or two, because that Chargers defense is definitely good. It's strong in some capacities. It can be beaten in certain ones, but I don't think anybody but Evans really qualifies for the type of player who can threaten them. And I don't think Brady's the type of quarterback to really suit Evans ideally in that whole matchup. So I think it's going to be one of those things like Brady isn't especially efficient, but Evans has definitely volume and maybe efficiency too, just because while Hayward is really good, and I guess Michael Davis has done a pretty good job at the other corner spot, and he's definitely built more like for Evans. But if they put Casey Hayward on Mike Evans, Evans every single time has the advantage there. Even if Hayward is a good corner, he's only good versus most types of receivers, and Evans is the exception because at 6'5", 230, he's like 7 inches taller, 50 pounds heavier, and he's still faster than Casey Hayward because Casey Hayward isn't very fast. So, he can just kind of – put one hand on Casey Hayward's helmet and just reach up with the other one and just kind of carry him like a backpack to the end zone.
Yep. And I think that could definitely happen here. I like the setup a lot for Mike Evans. I don't know if I like it for any of these other kind of speculative Tampa Bay receivers.
No.
Whether it's Miller or Watson, anything there?
No, I mean, they're interesting. I especially think Miller is a good player, but I don't think he's also nicked up. I don't know what the latest is with Scott Miller, but right. I feel like this is a tough setting for Brady, basically, because that Chargers pass rush can be a problem. And the reason I'm feeling okay about Evans is because when you're that big and when you're going against corners who don't have any reach to kind of like get their hands up in the air, you don't need a good throw to make a catch. Like I think Miller can get open, but I don't trust Brady to have the setup time and the accuracy to put it where Miller needs it. But at Miller being 5'10", 165 or whatever, he actually needs the ball to be in a place where he can catch it, whereas Evans just can dictate the space himself.
Right.
So yeah, I'm not really optimistic about the offense as a whole, and I can imagine Brady having a pretty ugly game, taking some hits, making some ugly throws. But I just think Evans is the kind of player who can make catch. I guess Howard too can make catches even on throws that are kind of ugly in an offense that's kind of ugly.
Okay, let's get on over to the Chargers side of this. Last week was the total green light situation for both Eckler and Kelly, and just the Chargers run game as a whole going up against the Panthers at home. Totally different scenario this week. The Buccaneers Only the Steelers are allowing less or fewer rushing yards per carry than the Buccaneers right now. They're holding opponents to 2.9 yards per carry. That's really, really impressive thus far. They've got 12 stuffs. They've only allowed 3 touchdowns on the ground thus far, and they've played some good running backs. So I think this – I mean, you're not benching Eckler, but I don't think that Kelly is flex spot viable this week the way he was last week.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see any room for him at all. Eckler is kind of running into a tough spot, like you said, but he's such a great player that I you definitely defer to him in season long just because of the usage that he projects for. But it's like, even as a tournament play in DFS, I don't have any reason against it, because it's like, sometimes great players beat great players. Like, going against a defense as good as the Buccaneers is concerning, but they will lose to a great player eventually. And it's like, Eckler is so good, and he could have quite a bit of usage going his way. I know Keenan Allen had the huge game last week. He'll have a tough matchup against Sean Murphy Bunting, and it'll be an interesting, you know, case study between those two, because Murphy Bunting could very soon be regarded as like one of the best corners in the league. So if Allen has a slightly off game, it wouldn't exactly be surprising necessarily.
If that happens, does it go to Mike Williams a little bit maybe then?
Well, he's all goofy right now, too. He picked up a hamstring deal after already playing through his shoulder. So I actually don't like his matchup, though, because Jamel Dean and Carlton Davis are corners who are specifically to counter receivers like Williams. So, yeah, it's like, if Allen can't get going, you could almost imagine, in my opinion, like a bit of a funnel toward Eckler or, I guess, Hunter Henry. But I'm mostly pessimistic for the Chargers offense, to be clear. Like, this could be a really difficult spot for Herbert.
Yeah, I mean, the Vegas implied total for the Chargers is 18 points. So definitely not enough.
Without Bulaga, their offensive line is beat up. That could go very badly for the Chargers.
Tough spot for the Chargers in this one. All right, let's move on over. We got the Ravens going up against the football team. They're going down I-95 down the corridor to go to FedEx Field. The Ravens obviously coming off a pretty sobering loss last week against the Chiefs. The football team, they were the football team against the Browns. This is a 13-point spread between the Ravens, or for the Ravens here. They are favored by 13. What do you make of this one?
Well, I'm a little concerned about the Ravens' offense just because they seemed kind of just bad against the Chiefs.
They sure did.
Even to the extent that they struggled, it's like I don't really have a good explanation for it. Like, I don't know why Marquise Brown is running that route over the middle of the
field. That was terrible.
Like, that's the Andrews just dropping a pass. That's, you know, whatever. Players drop passes. It happens eventually. But just the it's like, where's Miles Boykin in all these plays? I don't understand I don't understand why there isn't more credible threats in more parts of the field. And I guess, as much as I still like Marquise Brown a lot, I guess if they're running the offense like this, I'm not convinced that he's enough, because they're not specifically scheming him enough. They have to get more from the reps that are going toward Boykin if they're going to make it all balanced, because like you need to get Brown going downfield and in space. If you're giving him these curl routes, like, I don't know, just it doesn't seem like it's right maximize.
They sent him deep a few times too, but like you said, I mean, it's to have like the bread and butter of your, like, using him like a possession receiver makes no sense. Like, you need to be continually.
Don't give him Willie Snead routes. No. Give those to Willie Snead. But I think they should take Boykin out and put DuVernay at the other receiver spot. I don't have any reason to think they will, but it's like,
They might. If the returns are continue to be as empty as they are with Boykin and DuVernay, I mean, it was a special teams play, of course, but like, showing that electricity, getting that on the field opposite Marquise Brown, I think would be pretty appealing to an offensive coordinator, I would think.
Yeah, and you can't throw you can just leave Boykin in island coverage because they can't throw the ball to him quickly. So you don't have to worry about him just like juking the guy off of a screen and going the distance. Speed doesn't threaten you practically in that regard. And then if he's going deep, he doesn't really seem to have like the positioning instincts and like the high pointing instinct, the the just kind of innate ability to set up a defender and position yourself relative to them and time it all and know how to execute it all, you know, in the way that great athletes can but can't explain. You know, it's like he has the speed and stuff, but he can't really apply it, it seems. Whereas DuVernay, it's like, you know, maybe he's not like a perfect prospect or anything, but he doesn't drop that touchdown pass in week one. He doesn't by any account seem to drop any kind of pass ever. And you could throw screens to him, after which he breaks tackles, we've seen him do. So I don't know what Boykin even theoretically does in this offense. And in the way they structure the offense, it's like they need him to do something right now. And they just they don't have any guy to kick it out to make this wide open 3-point shot, you know, and they need someone to step up there. But I guess against a defense like this, I guess it probably won't matter that much. And as much as the Washington pass rush would be frightening, it's not as frightening if Matt Ioannidis is out for the year, which he is.
Chase Young's out.
Doubtful. So, yeah, it's like with Matt Ioannidis and with Chase Young, I think this is basically the best six-man pass rush I've ever seen. But if you take those two away, it's merely good, and the rest of the Washington defense doesn't really seem to be good.
Nope. So I think that this should be a bounce back situation, but I am concerned about this Ravens offense long term. I think that the spread says a little bit more about where the football team's at than where the Ravens are right now. My faith is shaken, Mario. I'm hurting.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think they have a pretty clear issue that has a pretty clear solution, but I don't know if they're kind of willing to investigate, you know, the main maybe like painful conclusions they'd have to reach to actually address it head on.
You can't win if you have to be playing with the lead the entire time, and any time that you fall behind, you crumple and wilt. It doesn't work.
They need a more dynamic offense in the sense that like they need to be able to play within altered scripts.
Yeah, because you know the stark contrast of that versus the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl last year, having fallen behind by double digit points in each of those games, and then winning each of those games by double digit points. It shows you the gulf between the Chiefs and everyone else. And again, just like last part, I know we're days past the game, but I think that you need to play perfect to beat the Chiefs. And if the Chiefs play perfect, then your perfect doesn't matter.
Probably. But yeah, it's like when they fall behind, the defense stops respecting that Lamar run threat. And then it's like, yeah, it's not easy to throw the ball if they don't respect that threat. In that case, you're just kind of back to it's like you're calling an option pass play against a defense that's just playing, you know, prevent. It's like they're not biting on the option fake. It doesn't matter. You're just kind of like wasting a route, basically.
Yep. So not great there. And then I guess on the other side of the any comments on the Ravens backfield for fantasy purposes, and then anything to look out for football team wise, fantasy wise?
Well, the Ravens linebackers are struggling, so Antonio Gibson, I guess, could do something. But Dwayne Haskins and the offensive line are so dysfunctional that I don't really know that it matters. Like, Calais Campbell and Derek Wolf are the kind of guys who can make a really bad offensive line look really bad. Like, they're the kind of guys you need to be able to hold the anchor at the point of attack for at least a second, or else they just kind of clobber everybody and everybody falls over like bowling pins. And I'm kind of worried that's going to happen.
And then, I mean, so you have that issue, and then you have Dwayne Haskins's pocket awareness or lack thereof. And
he's totally shook. Can't really play right now.
I'm someone who was pretty high on Dwayne Haskins coming in, you know, as a draft prospect, but I might be out at this point. It looks really almost irredeemable. And I know that there's some, you know, again, the offensive line's not doing him any favors, but man, whew.
Well, the whole offense is kind of crap. So I don't, like, don't get me wrong. It's not good looking what's been going on, but also, I can't really put a final verdict on a quarterback when I also feel like there's a pretty good chance that's the worst offensive line I've ever seen. And it's just one of those, it's like, if I think it's the worst offensive line I've ever seen, then can I really blame anybody who plays behind it? And in my case, I can only say to an extent with Haskins for the time being.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Let's move on over. We got the Giants going out west to face the Rams. The Rams got So after the first 2 weeks, I was like, okay, maybe I was totally wrong about them. And then the first, what was it, like half or three quarters of their game against Buffalo last week, oh, maybe I wasn't wrong. And then they roared back. Maybe, you know, part of that had to do with Buffalo taking their foot off the gas or whatever. But I think no matter what, it's impressive for them to have come back and fought back the way that they did on the road against Buffalo. So I think the Rams are actually still a lot better than I anticipated coming into this year. The Giants a lot worse. And I know that there have been some injuries involved as well, but they really are one of the worst teams, if not the worst. If not for the Jets, they're probably the worst team in football, I would say. So Rams, 12.5-point favorites in this one. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it looks great for everybody on the Rams. I don't really have anything to add.
I guess if you would, give us a bit of a status check on Darrell Henderson and how legit it is and how legit he's looked over these last couple of weeks. Because I think that I've gone from being very, very worried that it was ever going to happen to like, oh, man, this is, how did I ever lose the faith? This is the guy that we saw at Memphis.
Yeah, I was pretty high on him as a prospect, so I was definitely disappointed in last year's results. Yeah. I lost some of the faith because I thought he was going to be like really good. Not a workhorse or anything, but I thought he could have done something like Aaron Jones kind of stuff, something like that. And he, you know, he averaged 8.9 yards per carry over two seasons. Not like one part of like 25 games or something like that. He averaged 8.9 yards per carry. Like, who can do that? Except, you know, at least a pretty good running back. And he's at this point, I think we can take it for granted. Like, yes, he is at least pretty good. And now we're kind of like waiting to see if he's anything more than that, because he might not be more than that. Like a running back who is merely pretty good could have one game like he had last week. But if he can start peeling off a series of games and, you know, a matchup like this one, you got to have pretty high expectations for him. It's like, this is a crap defense, a hopeless team. If you can't produce against this one at home, we probably have to start readjusting expectations again. But I feel like everything is teed up for him. And I look at his prospect profile and I say, you know, full faith for now, I guess.
Let's go. All right. I'm excited. I think where I can fit him in, I am going to put him in my lineups. This just sets up really well for him. And do you think that, like, with this being such a heavy spread, do you think that the passing game might have like a lower ceiling for DFS purposes? Like they could be in, you know, run the clock out mode pretty quickly.
They might be, but I think that would be a case, like especially 13, like the spread opened at 9 and is up to 13. And if we're talking a 2-touchdown victory, I think that's because as long as there isn't like a defensive touchdown or two involved, then it's one of those cases where the passing game was very productive and a lot to do with why the point total is as high as it is.
Okay. All right. That definitely checks out.
Kupp and Woods look great. Yep. Jefferson and all those guys, Higbee, they all look, it's just going to be too easy.
Yep. Yeah. The Giants are going to get dunked on pretty hard in that one. Let's get on over to the Patriots against the Chiefs. Probably the best matchup on paper of the week. Chiefs still 7-point favorites in that one. Over-under checking in at 53. Patriots coming off that strong win against the Raiders at home, the bounce back. They've looked really good so far. The Burkhead game happened. I don't anticipate it happening again. What do you make of this game?
Well, I guess the Burkhead thing is just subject to the status of James White, because it's like that one game that Burkhead had was kind of like the back taxes being paid on the James White rule that just hadn't been there the previous week. And it's like, okay, now you're getting like paid with interest, and it's Burkhead playing the White role. So I think, you know, considering we expected there to be always like a PPR running back two, or at least high flex in that James White role, I think that kind of explains Burkhead's functions last week. And I think it's just as simple as if White's out, then Burkhead's probably doing the same role, but it's the touchdowns that don't usually come with that role. Three of them on whatever, like 12 touches or whatever. That's normally not going to happen, and especially not in a game where they're heavy underdogs like this. So I'm not chasing Burkhead. I'm not chasing any part of the Patriots backfield here. And I'm kind of concerned for the Patriots offense, I guess, because I think they kind of, I feel like the Chiefs defense is largely built to stop offenses like the Ravens and the Patriots here. It's like they kind of put those boundary corners that are there to neutralize that deep threat that's normally so dangerous off of the run fake. and they get this length and speed with guys like Tre'Davious Ward to just cover the sideline and take away the sideline from you, force you into the middle of the field where they have Tyrann Mathieu. And it's like they just kind of they block your two main runways as an offense and kind of make the field shrink on you. And at that point, Cam Newton has to just kind of get it to Edelman, and Edelman needs to get away from Mathieu somehow, but which is really difficult to do. Or Newton has to run, or the Patriots have to be in a position where their run game can just take usage and play well with it, which is always easier said than done against the Chiefs and the way Mahomes tends to move the ball. So I feel like this is a game that could be kind of difficult for the Patriots. But if they have a good game kind of keeping up with the Chiefs offense, then I guess it's because N'Keal Harry or maybe Damir Bird did something. Because it's like Tyrann Mathieu is a problem for the slot receiver. And if they don't have Edelman, that's normally kind of like a death sentence for this offense.
Right, exactly. So this Chiefs defense, that, you know, obviously the offense gets all the accolades and most of the headlines and everything, but that defense is really legit top to bottom, and it presents a lot of problems for an offense, like you said, like the Patriots. As far as the Chiefs offensive personnel goes, green light for everybody, I assume.
I think so. I feel like the Patriots are pretty stubborn about their press man coverage, and it's like that works a lot of the time, but I don't know if it works against a team like the Chiefs and a quarterback who can extend plays and improvise plays and routes and throwing angles the way Mahomes can, because it's impossible to do man coverage forever. You know, it's like you need the pass rush to get there. You need the quarterback to be forced to throw the ball, and Mahomes has a way of just pulling the rug on you when you think the terms are set and just kind of changing the whole play. And all it takes is like you turn around to look to see where Mahomes is, and the receiver has changed directions on you, and it's a touchdown.
Yeah. Yeah, keenly aware of that. Gosh, Monday was just so soul-cleaving. Anyway, all right, let's move on over to the Bills going up against the Raiders. We got the Raiders, three-point underdogs at home against the Bills. The Bills have been playing extremely well. I think you could probably argue that they might be the second-best team in the AFC right now, behind the Chiefs.
Probably.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a... The Raiders are at least pretty good. They're not a team that is going to make a deep run into the playoffs, but they could make the postseason as a wild card team. I think that they're solid enough, but I think the Bills are definitely a cut above them. So I think that they can win this one on the road here, even after like that emotional win last week at home. Where are you at with this game?
Yeah, I guess I pretty much agree with everything you said. I think John Gruden's general approach is to kind of play an 8-8 game and then go zero tempo to try to increase the amount of luck that determines the game, to try to reduce it to the question of which way it bounces on one particular play, you know, and just hope that it's your side. And then, you know, by being the lesser team, that's a good setup for you because it's 50-50 instead of 40-60 or whatever you're normally looking at. And I think that's what they'll do here. Which would kind of make sense insofar as giving Josh Jacobs a lot of usage, because I don't want Derek Carr throwing the ball against that defense. Like, yeah, normally I might say like, hey, stop running it so much. But in this one, it's like, yeah, give Josh Jacobs 35 carries. What better things do you have to do? Like, I know there's going to be Darren Waller and, you know, the receivers are beat up, but even if they were healthy, it's like, other than Darren Waller, I don't think you really have anything in this passing game that you should feel the need to get going. Like it would be nice if you can get Renfro or those outside receivers going, but it's with Derek Carr, it's not sustainable. There's no need to make your foundation have much to do with these things. So aside from Waller, it's like they just don't really have anything to work with, in my opinion. Like Renfro should be busy in this game if those outside receivers are out. I just don't think his activity is the kind that indicates that your team is like gaining a competitive advantage. It's more like Hunter Renfro gets the ball when time is passing meaninglessly, you know. So I think that if they give Jacobs the ball a lot, he could do pretty well, because it's probably easier to run on the Bills than it is to throw on them. And it kind of neutralizes it kind of keeps Poyer and the safeties Poyer and Hyde out of the game, and keeps Tre'Davious White from you know, permeating the outcome of the game, which is good. And it makes the clock shorter, and it puts more pressure Josh Allen for the plays that he gets. Like part of what's been so good about his setup the first few weeks is that they run so many plays, and it's like if you have to defend Josh Allen throwing the ball 40 times as a defense, like yeah, that's you're gonna get gassed.
Yeah.
But if you only give him 27 pass attempts, and if you know whatever seven of them are on third down. Like that's a very different pressure question for Allen, even if the matchup is supposed to be easier. So I think it's pretty risky for the Bills, if only because, like I said, Gruden loves to reduce the game to a coin flip.
That is a really good point and a really interesting angle when it comes to just the Raiders in general, and then how it might slow the Bills' wagons down just a little bit this week. When it comes to the run game, how do they set up against the Raiders here? And you know, if Zach Moss is back in the fold, what do you do about Devin Singletary, who, you know, ran for 71 yards on 13 carries last week and also had 50 yards receiving?
Well, that's tough because I feel like the Bills' running game is due for some touchdowns. Like the running backs are due for some touchdowns. Part of Allen also having the fantasy point total that he has in the first 3 weeks is because he's just taking all the crops of the running backs, you know. It's like all the points that would go to the running back position have gone to Allen, and that can continue. But if Singletary or Moss start producing, then it almost necessarily comes at the expense of Allen's weeks 1 through 3 production. There's only just so much to go around. But I don't know if I think that this is a risky game for the Bills, and if the Raiders are chopping their play count from, you know, 74 to 58, then that makes it a narrow margin for those touchdowns to take possibility, you know? So I'm not really getting my hopes up for the Bills running backs, but especially if Moss is out, then you'd like Singletary just for his role, you know, in addition to his talent in the matchup. But I feel like it's maybe not the ideal, like it won't be a good setup for the running backs unless Carr has a bad game where he's kind of getting, he's both exposed, like needing to throw the ball and failing with the attempts that he does throw.
Okay. All right. Interesting. And then just one more detail on this Raiders defense to this point, allowing 5.6 yards per carry. And yeah, they've given up 6 rushing touchdowns so far. So
matchup is real nice for the run game. Yeah.
There you go. And, you know, I want Moss in there, but if he's not, then I'm going to have to think about Singletary for DFS pretty considerably. Yeah. I don't have any season long, but that's the beauty of DFS. You can get those guys that you missed out on, and this matchup would be really good. Let's get on over. We got a couple night games to knock out before we head out for this episode. We got the Eagles going up against the 49ers. Niners, 7-point favorites. Eagles,
bad.
Yeah. I mean, they've gotten no favors done to them as far as the injuries go. Like, I will.
Either the 49ers, and Shanahan has them looking pretty good, mm-hmm. you know? So it's like, I think Doug Peterson's a fine enough coach and whatever, but it seems like these teams have been dealt similar cards, or sorry, similar hands. And it's like, Shanahan's winning, Peterson is not.
Yeah, the Niners have bluffed their way out of it.
Yeah, I don't know why it would change here. I guess it could just change for some matchup reason that I can't see, or some variance reason that doesn't mean anything. But based on the general constitutions of these teams, I feel like that 7-point spread for the 49ers, while aggressive, might be somewhat earned.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I don't know how Wentz I don't know what they do. Like, I guess Sanders could just kind of like save the day for them, but I guess that's what I think it would need to be, and it seems like a pretty long shot.
Yeah, I don't really feel like that. Feel strongly that that's going to be how it unfolds. What do you think of this Eagles passing game now that not only Jalen Reagor is out, but also Dallas Goedert?
It's bad.
I mean, it was already tough with
Deshaun's missing practice time, I think. Man. So, and Arcega Whiteside and Hightower are both, Hightower isn't practicing today. I don't know what Arcega Whiteside's status is for today. Basically, they're down to Greg Ward at receiver. And
so time is a flat circle, man. We're back. We're back to Greg Ward.
Boston Scott is about to score 3 touchdowns. We're seeing how it could get worse. It's like last year they had Boston Scott scoring 3 touchdowns against the Giants at least, but now it's like this year's version of it is just Carson Wentz gets hit a bunch of times, and we all leave very sad. Or he misses some wide open receivers a few times, obviously. Yeah, I don't know what the Eagles have going for them other than their pass rush, I guess. Like, their pass rush is pretty good. But I don't think the 49ers really need to expose themselves to that pass rush very much. And this is insane, but it's like I kind of just trust Nick Mullins to protect the ball better than Carson Wentz, I guess.
I do too. And Kittle looks like he could be back. Mostert, I'm not as confident in necessarily. They could probably, based on the way that their run game worked last week, they could probably, you know, save Mostert for next week for a tougher matchup and go from there. We'll have to see what they go with there. It looks like Brandon Ayuk is starting to become a thing as well. So yeah, this sets up really, really nicely for the Niners and very, very poorly on the other side for the Eagles there. And then rounding things out, we got the Falcons going up against the Packers. Falcons, they're just kind of like stuck in this loop where they put up points, and then they're like chasing the dragon of their 28-3 collapse in the Super Bowl, and they just continue to find new and dangerous ways of trying to chase that high continually. And it's been pretty funny, and it's been great for fantasy purposes. I mean, again, we drew the comparison a little bit in the preseason to the Falcons being this year's Bucks, as far as like the belligerent, no real good football being played, but great for fantasy, that type of stuff. I think that is going to continue here against the Packers. I think there's going to be a lot of points scored in this one, but the Packers really do like look like they're legit one of the best teams in the NFC. I did not feel that way last year when they were 13-3, but the way that Rodgers is playing, the way that those pass catchers have developed, I mean, Alan Lazard looks like a legit player that I think is basically a fringe wide receiver too the rest of the season. Man, it's just the Packers look great. I don't know what else to say. And it's not like just because I drink all the water up here.
Like, I think it's all Rodgers, and I can't figure out what the hell happened. Like, I don't remember him looking particularly good for like 3 years. And these first three games here, he's just looked lights out.
It's so good for the narrative, guys. Just like, they knew that if they drafted Jordan Love and didn't give him any receivers, that it would piss him off just enough.
Man. Dude, if that is the actual reason, I'm just so pissed off. Because it's like, I don't have a great counter to that.
No.
I don't know what, like, so, oh, do you think he got better because they helped him? I was like, no, they didn't. It's like, okay, so what changed? Like, I guess Jordan Love just motivated him and stupid, you know, football talk, you know, light a fire under him, etc. I guess that's the explanation. But I can't believe that. But on the other hand, I don't have a better explanation. So, you know,
here we are.
They're right. The Jordan Love pick was actually genius for that reason. So I don't know, but he looks great if he doesn't fall off. And the thing is, I would have expected him to kind of fall off if it weren't for the last game, not having Davante Adams and doing the things that he's done. It's like, that's different. Like, it's him having receivers that basically aren't very good. And I know Lazard's good, but it's like MVS is just a decoy. If they actually need to throw him the ball and need him to make a catch, it is a risky proposition. And nobody else does anything except Aaron Jones. But yeah, Rodgers just he still looked great without Davante Adams. And I really don't think that would have been the case in recent years. And if it is the case again, and since we're talking about the Falcons and we're playing in Lambeau, I'll just assume it'll remain the case in this game, if only because the Falcons are just such a joke. Then, I don't really see how they can keep up. But Julio playing would help, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what to make of that. But even if they have Julio, I guess I should say, if Julio's playing, then I don't really like the 7-point spread. The 5 that it opened at is maybe something that I would feel comfortable with. But if they don't have Julio, then it's like Green Bay by, I don't know, 11 or something.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Do you think Calvin Ridley's like a top 5-ish receiver the rest of the way, potentially?
Probably. He seems to be something like a top 10, top 12, just in terms of talent. And then his role is like, you know, top 8 kind of thing. So he's a guy who I think could be pretty matchup neutral, or sorry, matchup like resistant, just because his sort of his skill set and his trait set are the kind of traits that lend to just easy usage. Like it's the kind of stuff that there are a lot of types of plays and play designs where you can use someone who can do what Ridley can do. It's not like he's a receiver you can only use from, you know, yards 15 onward. It's like you can use him at all levels. So if a matchup, which Jaire Alexander is a difficult matchup, but if it's presenting some difficulties, it's like Ridley's the kind of guy who you can always have a plan B with because he can just do a lot of stuff well. So I think he could kind of maybe like have a modest efficiency sort of outcome against Jaire Alexander. But the volume is all but guaranteed to be so high that it just doesn't really matter.
Exactly. So really like his setup in this one and moving forward. And then is there a third option that you can figure out from this Atlanta offense? Obviously, we know Julio went healthy and then Ridley. But Gage has been dinged up. They got some, you know, good usage as pass catchers out of the backfield last week. And maybe that factors in against the Packers team. I mean, Kamara is so different than 2020 Todd Gurley or Brian Hill, of course. I mean, to be clear, but Packers definitely struggled to account for the pass catching threat from the backfield. Do you think the Falcons decide to like maybe press that a little bit?
I guess they could try. I'm not really worried about it for the Packers, but I guess they could try. I think that the part of why everybody but Ridley might be everybody but Ridley and Julio. If Julio's out there, I don't really think the Packers can cover him at all. It's like if they want to try to put Kevin King on him, go ahead. That just because he's big and fast doesn't mean he's going to be any good against Julio. But even Jaire, if Jaire's on Julio, it's like I love Jaire, but 6'3", 220 Julio, who's as fast as even Alexander at like 30 pounds lighter. It's like being perfect in coverage might not be enough in that case. But if Julio's out and Jaire Alexander's falling around Ridley, and then we got – even if Russell Gage is back from his concussion, he's going against Chandon Sullivan, who seems pretty good. He seems like probably one of the better slot corners in the league, actually. So I don't think Gage is very good. I think he loses that matchup. I think it basically makes another dead end, another funnel back toward Calvin Ridley, maybe to Hayden Hurst. I can't really think of what his matchup specifically looks like, but there's going to be a funnel toward him if Julio isn't out there. So if Julio's out, I think Hurst and Ridley both get volume. But I think there would just be too many plays where Ryan ends up like patting the ball and just, you know, taking a sack or throwing it away or whatever. I do like Olamide Zaccheaus, but I can't tell if they're like seriously getting him going. I know he was good last week, but they seemed hell bent on rigging like the slot receiver competition for Gage. Like I'm pretty sure Zaccheaus is better. So I don't think they're not like politically inclined to get Zaccheaus going the way that they are Gage and Hayden Hurst. But if I do like Zaccheaus, and if they start giving him a chance, I think he's just going to keep doing well.
Yeah, we're Zaccheaus guys. This is known. So hopefully that gets rolling and he can start to move past Gage.
I need to see Zaccheaus running against Kevin King. That would be hilarious. Kevin King would just turn into a pile of like Jenga pieces trying to turn and run with him.
Pillar of salt. And then I guess looking at these defenses one last time, one more detail to throw out there, because it's a great unstoppable force versus immovable object, but the inverse of that, because the Falcons are like the second worst team against tight ends, but the Packers tight ends don't really exist to me. They got Big Bob and they got Jay Sternberger, who did get involved last week for the first time in his NFL career. Maybe this is just like showdown slate type of discussion, but maybe go get some Big Bob for Sunday night or Monday night.
Sorry, I should have figured this. Is Adams supposed to be back for this?
I think he's trending in the right direction as far as I know.
So when Adams actually left the passing game, Tanyan stepped up a bit. Like he did nothing in week one, but each of the past two games, Tanyan's been pretty good. And yeah, Sternberger did something last week too. So I think Tanyan can definitely run. I don't know how skilled he is or whatever, but he can definitely run and he's doing pretty well so far. So if there's a scenario where Adams isn't producing, I actually think Tanyan could be pretty good.
I like it. They asked me on the radio yesterday down in Orlando, like, who is Robert Tanyan? And I was like, oh, Big Bob?
Ask somebody who went to Indiana State.
That's right, brother. Yeah, so I got to spread the gospel of Big Bob a little bit on a Wednesday afternoon. I was happy about that. But anyway, that is going to wrap things up for this edition of the RotoWire NFL podcast. From Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening. And be sure to tune in for the Friday show, All DFS with Scott Gjenstad and Andrew Laird. It's going to be great. Stay tuned for that one. Thanks for listening.